Excuse me. I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Somebody do the roll, please.
Yes, I'll do that with pleasure, Avery. On the call, we have Wolf Ulrich Knobin, Ron Andrus, Avery Doria, and for staff, we have Julie Headland, Ken Bauer, and Glenda Saint-Jarie, myself. And this is the 21st of April for the GNSO Council Operation Work Team Group. Thank you. Over to you, Avery.
Okay, thanks. So I guess now I have to ask somebody to help me in terms of trying to figure out where we were in terms of an agenda for today. I know we have a bunch of documents that Ken has been working on and that we've been talking about in various states, but I do not see in front of me something that tells me which document we're in the process of working on, and I do not remember.
Thank you, Avery. Well, I can. I'll begin by speaking to that. This is Julie, but I will also turn it over to Ken because I know he's keeping track of all the various pieces of the procedures. But one of the main items that we've been discussing on the list is the SOI DOI procedures, which the OSC sent back to the work team and suggested by Steve. And Ron made comments on those. I think that that might be a relatively easy one for us to tackle if we'd like to today. And actually, I also sent to Ray, but I hadn't sent it to the team, or he hadn't sent it on to the team. There were some public comments received in the public comments process on the working group guidelines that included a draft of the SOI-DOI document that we may wish to consider as well. And then there were some items that were tasks that were completed since the last call. And in particular, on the last call, we discussed the term limits section and had made some, had asked Ken to make some changes to the percentages there. And I think that we were close, if not in agreement on that document, but perhaps we could deal with that quickly. And Avery, if you'd like, I can ask Ken to mention a few of the other things that are out there for the work team to discuss.
I mean, I don't know if that's necessary. If we finish all that stuff, then that might be worth doing.
That might be enough, right?
Right, but we may already have enough there. Now, if I remember correctly, where we got to on the SOI-DOI and the recommendations that we got to Steve is that there seemed to be general agreement with his suggestions, and I had, you know, made a little bit of noise about the fact that the OSC would just make the decision and send it up as opposed to sending it back, but that was really just a procedural, you know, blip. And so I guess the question asked is, do we have more to talk about in terms of Steve's recommendations, or are we all set on those?
This is Ron. I would say the only issue that I wanted to touch on is just to make sure that the language was correct, because there was some information coming back from the OSC saying there was some confusion whether it was declaration of interest or disclosure of interest. I went back and looked at the document, didn't see that per se, but I think except for one omission. But other than that, just making sure this is a declaration of interest and making sure that language is correct, I'm ready to go with it.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else want to comment? So everyone else is fine with it?
No, it's Wolf speaking.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with that. You know, okay. I didn't go into those details here. So with regard to the declaration or disclosure or what else, just a question for that, because I was searching for the document. Are we referring to the version from March 7 at the time being?
This is Julie. There was a version sent to the OSC on the 8th of April. that I think was copied to the team, but I can send it around. It incorporated, you know, the changes that we had discussed probably. I think it incorporated the changes we discussed as of our March 28th meeting. It may have been kind of the March 8th version. I don't recall at the moment.
Okay.
But it wouldn't include these recommended changes.
No, it does not. Because
so
I have not
have version with
those
that
changes
yet.
Because of the, you know, fact that I wasn't absolutely positive. Well, I hadn't seen that every work team member had weighed in, so I didn't know if we needed to discuss them here. But I do have a question, Ron, relating to the issue of disclosure of interest or declaration of interest. In the version that we sent to the OSC, I think, unless we've missed a reference somewhere in the document, we have uniformly called this a disclosure of interest as opposed to a declaration of interest.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. I may have been confused with the two, getting them
in the wrong order,
but exactly. My point was just making sure that that we have that clarification there, because Steve sent something out, and I'm looking back at this date, OSC submission, 13 April, version 13 April from KB. So Ken had forwarded something, and it was in that there was, Steve had made some mention of it. So I just wanted to make sure that was correct. And from my point of view, I'm not too concerned about which word it is, but because I know we did discuss that at some length.
Yeah,
so
that's
fine.
Thank you. I should mention that actually that was also a question that was raised in the public comments that were received on an earlier version of the document that was sent around with the working group guidelines. I mean, not so much what is, you know, whether it should be disclosure of interest or declaration of interest, but Chuck Gomes in particular had asked what is the difference between a statement of interest and a disclosure of interest. And someone else in the public comment period, I think it was the registry stakeholder group had asked if there was any real difference between a statement of interest and a disclosure of interest, since they note both documents appear to include a declaration of direct or indirect interest that may affect a relevant party's judgment or be perceived to affect an individual's judgment. So I don't know if we want to talk about whether or not we need to have any additional...
No, if I may, this is Ron. All of that got clarified, and particularly in Nairobi with Chuck as well. So he understands now the difference between the two, and it's quite clear. So I don't think there's anyone on the OSC, unless, Avery, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think, Wolf Ulrich, you're also on the OSC. I don't think anyone has any confusion between the two now.
I agree with you. I don't think so. I'm wondering, though, just listening to this, how often the confusion will be encountered again in the future by new people reading this, because we do slightly overload the term interest, and one we're sort of talking about a statement of general interest, and in another we're talking about a declaration of a particular interest. And I just, you know, it keeps coming up. I had the question once months ago, and then, okay, I got it, and then other people, every time anybody runs into it, they have the questions, we explain it, and they're fine. But I'm wondering if we haven't run into what might be a more generic problem with the naming of these things, and I just bring it up as a question because it seems to recur a lot.
If I may respond to that... I'm actually on the wiki trying to find the most recent version, and I'm not finding it. But if perhaps someone could send the most recent one or point me to it. But it seemed to me that Philip Shepherd, as the new chair, or the replacement chair for Chuck, when Chuck went off to chair the GNSO, when Philip came in, he added some language to define it on the OSC level, and everyone at the OSC was happy with that. That's what I was referring to. So I think there was a little bit of definition amendment, if I could say that.
Actually, that's correct. And I'll send around the version shortly. I I'm sorry, I should have made it more prominent. I think it had been copied to the team, but that was some time ago. So, in the definitions, Philip had amended the definitions. First of all, to say amended the definition for the GNSO generic name supporting organization to make it a little more clear, and then for statement of interest, he amended the definition slightly. It says relevant to membership of the GNSO group, a written statement made by a relevant party that provides a declaration of direct and indirect interests that may affect or be perceived to affect the relevant party's judgment on any matters to be considered by the GNSO group.
That's it.
That's it. Oh, I'm sorry. And then, well, I'm reading down further. Sorry. I didn't scroll down. Disclosure of interest. Relevant to a specific issue at a specific time. A written statement made by a relevant party of direct and indirect interests that may be commercial, e.g. monetary payment, or non-commercial, e.g. non-tangible benefits such as publicity, political, or academic visibility, and may affect or be perceived to affect the relevant party's judgment on a specific issue.
How does that sound, Avery?
I think the definitions are fine and they're clear. I am just, and the question I brought up really had to do with the name, that basically it'll always be, don't bother us with this SOIDOI question, go read the book. Everybody's going to run into it. What do you mean? So, and that's why, and it was just an off the top of my head, that the declaration of interest is really a declaration of particular interest. And you know, but not that we want to call it dopey or anything, but it's just, and I just brought it up as a question, and it probably should just be ignored. I just see us running into this, and yes, we will tell people, go read the definition, or we'll end up explaining it forever.
The other element there is that There are two more reviews, as I understand this, meaning the work team is supposed to come up with high-level principles and so forth and pass them on to the OSC. The OSC then will chew on this to make sure that they feel comfortable and understand it, and then they'll send it on, provided they agree, they'll send it on to the GNSO, who will probably debate and finalize that. So from my view is, any rough edges will kind of get knocked off along the way, but I think we're pretty well there on that document.
Anyone else? In which case, it might be worth just walking through the other, while we're on this document, the other comments that were received.
And if I may, has it been emailed around, or is it being done?
Ron, this is Julie. I just sent it.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And I should, Ari, if you like, I can go back. There was yet another public comment that I had that we had not yet discussed.
Yeah, that's what I was asking for. So
right.
That's
okay.
And
well,
I guess you also have to ask someone to actually make the changes to the, I guess that would be Ken.
Aubrey, this is Julie. That would be me because I've more specifically devoted to that particular document.
Okay, sorry.
Not at all. Not a problem. So an additional comment, and let me just, I will forward these also to the group. I had sent them to Ray, but I'll go ahead and read it this as well. So this is a comment received by INTA, and it concerns, several issues. They say that the committee, I guess, on behalf of INTA, the INTA's committee understands as a GNSO secretary it will collect expressions of interest to participate and verify that submission was from a real person and then send a confirmation of receipt with a statement of interest, and a disclosure of interest form may also be required. Therefore, the committee, that is the INTA, recommends taking precautions to ensure that these SOIs and DOIs do not inadvertently contain confidential personal information. It appears that the SOI and DOI will be posted on the Internet, which they, this is an aside by me, they already are indeed posted on the Internet, and that will continue, at least according to these procedures. So they suggest, the INTA suggests making changes to the template for the SOI, and by that they mean the questions that are asked, and I think they are actually talking about the SOI as opposed to the DOI. And specifically for current vocation, employer, and position, they recommend adding country/location of the individual. With regard to the requirement that an interested person identify any financial ownership or senior management leadership interests in registries, registrars, or other firms that are interested parties, and describe any arrangements, agreements between you and another group, constituency, or persons regarding your nomination, nomination/selection as a work team member, the INTA says, state, if accurate, that this information will be kept confidential and or provide examples of recommended language to prevent individuals from disclosing sensitive information that could potentially expose ICANN to additional means to protect that information. Consider that these submissions will come from people in many different jurisdictions with different regulations, some quite onerous, regarding the protection of sensitive information. Existing SOIs demonstrate that this information can be and has been provided in general terms. And then provide a checklist that individuals fill in to ensure that a no response is tracked. That's the end of it. So I think the checklist would be, you know, to set these SOI, DOI, this SOI set of questions in the form of a yes, no. And I think in a subsequent version, and the version that we have out there now, we actually do have a format that where someone has to provide an answer. Please answer yes or no. If the answer is yes, please provide the name of an entity, et cetera. So I think we've set it up a little bit that way. So to summarize, they have concerns about the confidentiality of the information, and they'd like location information to be added, and they would like the format to be in the form of a checklist to elicit yes or no responses.
Okay, thanks. Any comments?
This is Ron. I'll go in the queue.
Sure, it looks like you're the only person in it. With three of us, it's not that hard.
Already.
Off collision.
Then I'll start. It's. I think the idea of including a location in terms of the country or location of the individual is a very good idea. I don't see how that would be detrimental, and in fact, it could be very helpful to give people an understanding of our geographic diversity within that particular work group. So from my point of view, that point seems kind of logical to me.
Question from me on that one, and this relates to me personally. Someone that is multiply resident and moving around all the time would need to put in all the locations that they might find themselves in? Or would vary be an acceptable answer? I when I saw that and wasn't sitting in a chairing a meeting role, I looked at country and said, no way. You know, of course, I never even allow my country to be put on my badge at ICANN meeting.
But I think you're unique in that way.
No, actually, there was a couple of us. But beyond that, if for example someone is, you know, are we talking about residence? Are we talking about citizenship? If someone basically has multiple country residents, are we asking them to list all of that? That's really where I'm going with it. And I don't think I'm unique in that respect at all.
I agree. I agree with your the direction you're going with this, Aubrey. I think that the nation which passport you hold. But then again, I'm Canadian and I have citizenship in Canada and the United States. But I would declare one or the other. And I think that's the point here. It's about making a statement of interest that, you know, I'm a Canadian citizen.
So you think citizenship's more important than residence?
I would think so. I would think so because that's what we're, when we talk about diversity, isn't that the barometer that we use today?
I think on terms of the board, we're using residence.
Oh, is it residence?
I believe so. Someone should correct me. But I believe that we've gotten to a residence model. Because otherwise what happened is a person with multiple citizenships was pretty much could be eliminated from the board. If you wanted to pick them as the African, but they also had a North American passport, and there were already six North Americans, they were out. So they basically, I think, have remodeled it to country of declared residence. And so that's partly, you know, why I would bring that up.
Yeah, well, it's Vo speaking, if I may. Avi, I'm not fully conform with you because so if I remember, for example, well, maybe on board level it's the case, but so we had this discussion, you know, just with regard to the review teams from the AOC, review teams, so with regard to gender and geographic diversity, and it came up also some people to some extent they were announcing their residence. And to extend the question was, is it a kind of permanent residence or is it just a just for some time? Yeah, and the other thing versus nationalities, and in this case we decided in the evaluation team to look at the nationality because you know we couldn't judge on the question of permanent residence or not. So, and it seems to me that the nationality adheres to more, a little bit more permanence, let me say, rather than the residence. So that's my opinion on that.
Yeah, I would say it varies. And those of us with multiple citizenships, you know, it has been. But yeah, okay. I guess we just need to resolve it one way or another, you know. My personal peccadilloes that I'll always say other no matter what is something that'll have to be dealt with by people saying you can't say other, but I always will. But that's beside the point. So I guess this group just really needs to decide which it prefers.
With regard to the geographical diversity that, for example, the nominating committee might look at. How is that, Aubrey? Are you aware of the passport or residence?
But based on residence, because what you find is you have a lot of people, and I think it's happened in these particular cases, where they're listed as Africa, but they've lived in the U.S. for the last 20 years. And,
right.
And then there's a certain amount of, you know, there's always that stress between diaspora and people that are sticking it out at home. And if you're supposed to be representing the interests of at home, living 10, 20 years in the United States, even if you're still traveling on just a, you know, African or Asian or Latin American passport, you know, you're a European, you're a North American just by fact of staying there for 10 years.
Okay, so if we go with residence, then being that is already the standard at the board level and the non-com.
It needs to be confirmed. I want to say that. I believe that, but it needs to be confirmed.
Understood. But if we went that way, then it brings up the question: is this? Do we defer? How do we define your residence? Because coming back to a little bit what Wolf Ulrich was saying, I'm not sure if this is the direction you were going, Wolf. But is it my legal residence? Is it the residence where I pay taxes? That makes me a resident.
You do it on declared residence. You declare just one, and especially in something like this, it really doesn't make a difference what your residence is in a working group.
Hmm.
I mean,
well, it's only that only we're asking people to, you know, we're trying to trying to create a raise the bar here in terms of people being more ethical within the work teams and so forth, and it really is about making sure, you know, we're raising a level of honesty that can be tracked. You know, my wife's family is from Italy, and I spend, you know, probably, you know, 6 weeks, you know, or so, 6 to 8 weeks in Italy over the course of a year. If I were to say, well, I'm living in Italy, so I really don't have too much, you know, I'm making that my statement of interest, it's really not true. Now, I can get mail at my mother-in-law's address, and I can do a lot of things, but it's not factually correct. So I think we want to have a look at that a little more closely.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's all speaking. So for me, I will come back to what I think the question also Avery raised. So is it really requested here and required, well, to come up with this country and the location where people are living in this regard? You know, that was, I understand the question of the INTA was, so their suggestion was, okay, come up with some current vocation, employer and position, which is, that's what I support. And the question then at country location of the individual, where does it come from, this issue? Because is that really necessary, well, with regards to the question of the SOI, which is asking for any relationship to any kind of your employment and these things. So, is it really so important?
I'm thinking a little bit like you, Wolf. I'm trying to understand the, you know, again, we were working so hard on the vertical integration work group about harm. So I'm thinking harm now as we're discussing this, and you know, where would somebody be advantaged by their location? If I'm an employee of Microsoft, does it matter if I'm in Redmond or if I'm in Germany or if I'm in Thailand?
Mm-hmm.
The answer to that question is, you know, what leverage would it bring me to be in a specific location? So, I mean, the number of scenarios that could possibly happen, you know, it's just, you know, it's unending. So I don't know. How we do it, but I I'm not sure, what value it brings, but there does seem to be some logic in saying that, you know, this is my employer and this is where I'm based. Because it may come up at some point with, you know, diversity for work teams or some other element that might have some value. So I don't see why we wouldn't want to do it. I'm just questioning how we might do it.
Sorry, if I can. I mean, I guess I'd actually argue for some value in the declared residence. And, yes, people could, because what you're trying to say there, what we're trying to say in most of the statement of interest is, when you listen to me, what perspective are you getting from
right. My
words?
Right.
So I see it less in the harm thing, but more in the, this is to give you a picture so that when I talk, you know that this is the perspective I'm trying to put through. Now, if I were to say, and it's strange because my third passport, if I ever get it, would be Italian, so I'll use that as an example. If I were to say that I am Italian and I'm identifying that way, first of all the Italians would either giggle or they'd say, yeah, wannabe. And so therefore it's something that is, again, subject to public feedback. Whereas if I say I'm declaring resident in Sweden where I spend half my year, nobody would pass the giggle test. But if I say I'm Italian, I get the giggle test. I say, no, I've applied for my Italian passport, and that's the perspective I'm taking. It is part of the self-referential picture that we build and such. So I'm not sure that there's a loss in allowing it to be declared residence, and obviously one can't declare multiple residents in different working groups. That would be noticed. The other people that are residents up there would notice, you know, hey, we've never invited you to the German speakers dinner, if you declare German, and so on, that I actually don't see harm, and if somebody declares something that seems unusual because that's the identification they're giving, that may be the right picture to give.
This is Ron. I'm in agreement with you on this, Avery, that it does, you know, if I stand up and say I'm Ron Andruff and this is my company and so forth, and I'm based in Malaysia, then it does give a different picture than I'm, you know, saying I'm Ron Andruff and you don't know where I'm based.
Hmm.
So I do think there's a lot of merit in that. So if we can agree there's merit in having a location,
yes,
then the question is on what basis, you know, what is the principal deciding factor? And I would think that wherever I pay my taxes. Now, do you pay taxes in Sweden for your half year of effort there, or you're an yeah. So my point is clear that, you know, you would pay some taxes because of your location and the check you get, you know, is paid out in that country. So maybe it's you know, just a simple determinator as opposed to passports, because I do agree. Multiple passports, you know, that's a whole different story. And Africans living 20 years in North America are pretty well out of touch, I think, with what's happening on the ground in Africa on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I could agree either. So that means, as Wolf speaking, so I also see a merit of saying something about your where you come from, let me say it this way. So, because, you know, also I expect, you know, from people talking or just presenting themselves, okay, I would like to know about that. You know, it's just also a kind of politeness. Yeah. So the question is then, here we are talking about of obligations, well, to announce that or to bring it up. So, well, I could live with that, you know, either with the location where you are tax paying. But, you know, for example, it is, you know, we have in Germany, for example, we have the rule, you know, you have to pay the tax in this country where you are more than 180 days a year staying, yeah?
Right.
So people are looking for that, for example, yeah? And okay, if it could be, it could be done that way.
Yeah,
I'm fine.
I also play in the U.S. And just want to point out one of the things for not saying country, but saying location. Is, for example, we have people whose identity is being from Catalonia, not from being from Spain.
Agreed.
And so that would be another reason why one would not want to make it country, and one would want to allow for them to declare what it was important about them to declare.
Very good.
Not sure how we write this down, but that's, I guess, a challenge for Julie.
yeah, this is Julie. So, I mean, the list of questions, you know, the first one is please identify your current employers and positions. The next question could be please identify your declared residence. How complicated do we want to make it? I mean, please declare your residence.
Exactly. I think that's fine, and you could put in parens the residence is defined by where you pay taxes.
Or maybe defined that way, yeah?
Yeah. Maybe defined, yeah. Maybe defined. That's,
yeah.
That's exactly. A little more ambiguous would work there.
Catalonia pays taxes in Spain.
Right.
Right. Maybe defined by, okay, where you pay. Okay, well, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, well, then I will add that. I'll add that as a question number two. The other item that that the INTA raised was the issue of confidentiality. I mean, they you know, after, you know, asking the questions concerning ownership and investment and compensation and so on, the INTA asked that the procedure state, if accurate, that this information will be kept confidential, and or provide examples of recommended language to prevent individuals from disclosing sensitive information that could potentially expose ICANN to additional burdens to protect that information.
That is actually a really good point, because the privacy rules are vary worldwide, and giving the name of some of this stuff could run against somebody's, some nations, some regions, policy requirements, and ICANN would be subject to whatever based upon the policy requirements. So that is a good issue. I'm not quite sure. Anybody have a comment or thought?
This is
I have a question. Wolf speaking. So is the what is the procedure right now at the time being? So there are a lot of SOIs circulated or communicated to ICANN. How do they deal with
it? On the web page.
Yeah, this is Julie. This information is not currently kept confidential.
Well, and that's my point. This is Ron. I was about to say that I think it comes down to the common sense test here. You know, we all filled in SOIs to participate on the VI working group just recently. I don't think anyone put more information into that that document than they felt was absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not disclose how much ownership share I have in my company. I said I'm a shareholder of my company. Others have said I'm a shareholder de minimis, and that's very clear that they have, you know, they have some options or something that's vesting, but for the most part, they're not an owner in a material way. So I don't think that, you know, I think the key of this whole thing was to say in the SOI and, particularly in the SOI, was about making sure that we do declare our interests so people can understand from whence this person speaks, as you mentioned earlier, Avery. So the to now make that, to cover that information up so nobody can see it, what purpose does that serve? I think we've just gone full circle to say we never got anywhere with this. So I think that the principle is right. Yes, there should be some, you know, confidentiality, but I think that rests in the hands of the individual filling out the SOI. So if I read your SOI, Avery, and I'm uncomfortable because I feel like you haven't been wholly honest, we have a bunch of provisions for that review to progress to find out if, in fact, that's true. That is confidential. That's not public knowledge per se. These discussions happen between staff, between chairs, you know, between the individual who was seen to be out of line. All of those things are happening, you know, off record, so to speak. So I think we already covered that by virtue of the fact that the individual filling out the SOI is going to put information that is appropriate but not confidential.
Mm-hmm. I think the only thing I would add to that is I think we have to make sure that people know that these things will be put on the web.
Yes.
We have to advise them to not disclose any information that, you know, they do not feel bound to disclose under their national privacy laws. But the thing that needs to be looked at, perhaps, and perhaps this is not us that needs to look at it, is because ICANN is the one posting these things on its web page, does ICANN need to take any precaution to protect it? And I'm not a lawyer, so why do I think this way? But does ICANN need to take any precaution to protect itself from any privacy liability, or is it fine that it's as long as it's in keeping with U.S. privacy laws, which barely exist, it should be okay? I don't know. And that would be the legal question. But since INTA brought up what sounds like almost a legal liability question in terms of privacy law, it does require the legal folks to sort of think about this and say, nope, we're fine, it's U.S., as long as they give it to us knowing it's public, we're cool, or we need to take some precaution, and I can't answer that.
I agree. The staff and legal should have a look at it, but I don't want them. What I'm fearful about is coming back with another five paragraphs on top of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, I would suggest that legal needs to look at it and say, as you just said, it's good to go, or, you know, here's a phrase, you know, that will protect us in that regard, and we're done. But it's a phrase, not three or four paragraphs.
Yeah.
This is Julie, if I might address that. I think that, legal has already looked through this, you know, document pretty thoroughly, but we could ask the pointed question, you know, with respect to, I mean, we could say, well, these are the questions we're asking. Is there any, anything we should include, you know, on behalf of ICANN, you know, to, you know, protect ICANN, you know, from, you know, privacy issues, whatever. But
a caveat,
not
basically, yeah.
For a review
yeah.
of the entire document again, but of the specific.
No, right.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I was just thinking, since that one refers to something, and if they think, no, we already thought of that, cool, no problem, then we're fine.
Yep.
Right. Well, I'll take the direction to do that and do that in a focused way.
Mm-hmm. It appears as one last bullet here, but it in the formatting might have jumped, and that was the checklist. Is that how you read that, Julie?
The way I read it is that they would like that you have to, the way the questions are written, and I think this is the change that we made, you can't have a nothing answer. I mean, or you have to be able to see if somebody has a no answer, you know, or if yes. I mean, basically, they, you know, want it to be in a format that elicits a response. So if you answer yes, then you say why. If you answer no, you've said, you know, no, I don't have any of these such interests, but you did get an answer. And then you could see if you if you didn't get an answer, if somebody didn't answer yes or no, then they didn't answer the question, in which case it would be easy, you know, to know that you needed to follow up. That's my reading of it.
But I don't have any again, on the checklist, if somebody puts in no, the whole point is every SOI has to be updated every 12 months, and the DOI is a per-subject update.
Right. Well, and also keeping in mind that what we'd like to do is to make this a web form so that you can't leave it blank.
Right. Right.
You know,
you can't hit submit unless there's a checkbox everywhere.
Right. You'll get that annoying question that you get on web forms that says, you know, this can't go through because you didn't answer X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't prevent somebody from putting something bogus in there, but.
Well, that's why it gets checked.
Exactly.
So that's the point. So for my part, I don't think we need to go any further with that point.
I think we've covered them all.
I do have one more question.
Okay.
Sorry to.
No, great.
To clarify, the one other item that Steve, additional thought that Steve Metallitz had, and I know this went around to our list, but I just want to see how we want to deal with it because maybe I've missed something, but. He says, a related issue to consider, if the system is to work as proposed, there needs to be an authoritative, current, and publicly available list of all entities with which ICANN has a transaction, contract, or other arrangement, e.g. registries, registrar, consultant, etc. Otherwise, a person who has a compensation arrangement with such an entity on an issue totally unrelated to ICANN might well be unaware that this is a relationship which he or she is supposed to disclose. And he said, I don't think such a list exists, or someone else said, I don't think such a list exists today as ICANN in a position to prepare, maintain, and post it. There was some discussion among staff that, no, such a list does not exist today. And I'm not sure that I think there might be some sensitivities to having such a list.
This was
not
a discussion.
Among staff.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah, not sensitivities among staff, I don't mean to say, but meaning that the list of which entities ICANN has a transaction, contract, or other arrangements may have sensitivities, you know, as far as those entities are concerned.
This was a discussion that actually was happening on the OSC list, and a number of members weighed in saying that made sense. I didn't see anyone push back on the OSC list to say, no, we don't want to do that. So I think from an OSC perspective, they all agree. I can tell you from my work team membership responsibility and my OSC position, I agree. And ICANN is all about transparency, so there should be not one party that has a contract or some agreement with ICANN that is unhappy about being listed there. And if they are, then we've got a problem in the house.
Yeah. I would tend to agree.
How do we address this issue? I guess that's my next question. Within these procedures, or do we need to? I mean, I'm not. I guess my confusion is, and I'm not quite sure exactly where this fits.
Yeah, it doesn't actually seem to fit. This is information that we need to be able to double check, but nothing within these procedures actually calls for that, as far as I can tell.
Right, and I think this is a OSC issue. OSC needs to then, as a body, needs to come back and ask ICANN to prepare this as a result of the work team's efforts. The work product has come out that they feel this would be an addition that should happen there. I don't believe this is happening at the work team level. It's at the OSC level that discussion has to happen.
This is Julie. That's a helpful clarification for me because I just wasn't quite sure what I was supposed to do with it with respect to this document.
Yeah. There was one other thing, if I can move past that, if everyone's in agreement, and that was just I think Philip or someone had made the comment about whether the statement regarding your nomination / selection as a work team member, he had said no one's really being nominated per se. It's not like you have a nominator and a seconder. It's more about participation as a work team member. So you're describing any arrangement agreements that you or any other group has regarding your participation as a work team member. I think that was a friendly amendment. I don't know if it happened at the OSC level or at this level, but I was inclined to agree with that as well. There is really no nomination happening here.
Oh, what? How do we want to amend the document?
Yes, just that you know, I'm looking at at the comments from INTA, which just they just restate that point, saying with regard to the requirement that the interested party, that's the bold text you see, with regard to the requirement that the interested person, and then it says, quote, identify any financial ownership or senior management / leadership interest in registries, registrars, or other firms that are interested in are interested parties, and that ends the quote, and it picks up again, new quote, describe any arrangement / agreement between you and any other group, constituency, or person regarding, and then this is the word, nomination / selection as a work team member, and I'm suggesting that we change the word nomination / selection to participation. So we're asking if you have any conflicts regarding your participation as a work team, because no one will be nominated, no one will be seconded, no one will be voted on. It'll be people will be selected to participate. So the question is, as a result of your participation, do you have any of conflict?
Yeah.
I see. So that's that is five sort of question set of questions five and five, and I see where that change needs to be made.
That you're saying 5.5?
Yeah, it's like 5 point and then small Roman numeral five.
So it's five small Roman numeral five.
Right.
Yes, that's correct. That is correct. Exactly.
Excellent. Thank you. I've captured that.
Yep.
Okay, I didn't have anything else that I needed that clarification on in case others do.
Did we lose you, Aubrey? I thought as much. We hadn't heard from her.
Yeah, let me see what happened here. I'm
she might have dropped off.
She looks like she got disconnected.
Yeah.
I do know she also has a meeting at the top of the hour as well.
Yeah.
Aubrey? All right. So so it's down to Wolf and I. Wolf, do you have any other comments or thoughts with regard to this, then, the SOIDOI?
No. I'm fine.
All right.
Thanks.
So then I'm going to pick up as interim chair, as our vice chair dropped, just to, if you're in agreement, Wolf, just to say that as far as we're concerned, this document now can go back to the OSC with
mm-hmm.
these revised changes. Are you in agreement?
Yes, I'm in agreement. So I'm not fully aware about the entirety of the concerns Philip raised, or you know, in conjunction with Steve Metellis. But if he went through all of this, so I'm really fine.
Yes, and they have, and so I think what they'll see is when we return this, they'll say thank you for taking our considerations into account.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I'm comfortable with that.
Ron, I would suggest, since they've asked for specific changes, to send back a redlined version so they can see where we've made the changes.
Yes, a redlined and a final one so that basically they can adopt the final one as opposed to sending
right.
it back to us saying, please send the final. So
redline and clean. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now I'll prepare that for Ray to send, and I'll copy the rest of the team.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be good.
Ray did say that he was trying to get on and was not able to get into the call, so I don't know what happened there.
He may be traveling and having a problem with the cell phone or whatever.
Yeah, or I don't know, maybe not clear. But anyway, I will do that then. The only other question I had is, my recollection and notes from the last call was that on the term limit section, we had made the changes that were suggested during the call, in particular to the percentages within that section. It was we made changes to the percentages, and then that section was supposed to be complete. That was at the March 24th meeting. Ken had made those changes and sent that around to the team. Perhaps I can send that document again along with this revised SOI DOI document. Everybody would have a chance to look at that as well, and then perhaps both, if they're okay, can go up to the OSC.
Well, it's Wolf speaking, so I have a question with regard to the timeline. As I remember, it was the intention of Philip was to forward it to the council this time, due to that open questions, this couldn't be done. So what is the timeline right now? The council meeting shall be, I think the next one is the 20th of May.
That's correct. Right, and 12th May. This is Avery. I finally got back in after my battery died. 12th May is the deadline for motions.
Yes.
Right. Thanks.
In your absence, Avery, just to bring you quickly up to speed, I stepped in as the vice chair, and we agreed that we will, with these changes now, we're good to go with the SOI DOI document, and then we've moved over to talk about the term limits that Julie was just discussing.
Okay, so do we need to see that document before we're fine with it, or we just assume?
Well, I understood on the last call, and correct me if I'm wrong, staff, because you were taking notes, I understood that Ken was going to send it around and we were going to put our comments online, and if anyone, had pushback on it, we would, that would be it. But otherwise,
yeah, that sounds cool.
We were good to
and,
go.
And it did get sent around, but I'm suggesting that I send it around also with this revised SOI DOI document, just
One last look?
Right.
All right. Well, let's do that under the provision that if anybody has comments, they've got 7 days to do it. If no comments come in, it just goes automatically because we're getting inundated with looking at the same stuff again and again and again, and mm-hmm. I really want to see some of this stuff move off our desk if mm-hmm. everyone agrees with that.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's really that sounds good.
This is Ken. Just a quick comment. In the email I sent on 8 April, I said attached is the final clean version of section 2.1 that deals with the special circumstance language. Per Ray's comment on the 7 April teleconference, this procedure has been reviewed and approved by the team. The attached document is ready to be sent to the OSC in partial fulfillment of the team's assignments. It was my understanding it was done.
Very good. That's what I thought too. So let's consider it done.
But didn't it get kicked back to us with these issues?
No, it hasn't gone anywhere, Aubrey. Sorry, this is Julie. I think that the anticipation was that Ray would send it up. But I think that given that I don't know, it just didn't get sent. So I think it just needs to get sent. And it was my confusion that it needed to be looked at again, and so it doesn't.
Okay.
So that would mean that it's ready to go and the SOI.
Which document is this? This is the SOI DOI or this is some other document?
Oh, well, this was the term limits one I mentioned.
Oh, the term limits one. Sorry, I got confused with coming back.
No, I'm
badly.
Sorry.
Okay.
I know Ken refers to it more accurately as section 2.1. I just don't keep track of all the sections and called it.
Yeah, neither do I.
I live and breathe it all the time. Sorry about that.
So that's the term limits document, which, as Ron had recalled, too, was actually.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Thanks. All right, so we have two documents that are ready to go up to the OSC. I will send them both to Ray, that we recommended they go to the OSC.
Yeah, Julie, this is Ken. May I make an observation or a comment?
Sure.
Or a question? I'm just curious what we can be doing between now and the next session, which I assume is 2 weeks away. It looks like we've got two versions or two documents of the list that are now ready to be sent. But what would the team like us to do in the interim?
Well, actually, Ken, before we ask the team, I mean, haven't we sent a few? You've sent some documents to the team to ask for comments, isn't that correct? There was board elections, and I think there was some discussion on that.
That's correct. I haven't any additional drafting work left to do. Other than make changes based on team recommendations. That was kind of where I was going with the question,
yeah.
Is what's the next step maybe?
Well, this is Ron. I understood on the section 2.4, the board seat elections, that you had sent documentation around, we commented online, and that was going to get us to what I'll call the almost final version, subject to us having one more
mm-hmm.
conversation about it. So for my part, I believe that board seat elections, I've checked that off my list, other than to see one last version of it.
Yeah.
And the second document that I was looking at was the voting, that was section 4, voting, and 3.8, absences, and I weighed in with my thoughts. I think Ivory did as well. So I think that there's been some comments on those, and if I'm not mistaken, when we had the last call, we said that was the whole point of it, was to send these out for the last round of comments, and then we would be done with those two or three sections, voting, absences, and board seat selection.
Although we would probably need one more set of discussions.
Yes,
and,
on the final version.
And that one,
because
it was, and that one had all sorts of interdependencies between things that need to see another version, need to read through it, need to understand really what sort of Gothic structure we've got built here.
Yeah, but we are in agreement, Avery, that was going to be more or less this next round we look at is kind of the final version. We're looking at the final documents and saying, okay, we like this, we don't like this, right?
Assuming nobody goes absolutely nuts over what we see there, including
yeah.
me. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Very good.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Julie. So then we, Ken can, you know, go ahead and send the sort of clean version of the board selections, if that's necessary, if there were no changes from the one he sent, and then and incorporate the comments, if not already done, for section 4.0 voting and section 3.8 absences for the work team to consider for the next call.
Okay.
That sounds good to me.
Well, thanks, Ken, for asking that question to help clarify, and thank you all of you for your direction.
And I'm going to have to beg everyone's indulgence. It's a little after 2, and I have to get to another meeting.
Right, and I'm sorry to keep everybody
on. Yes.
Thank
We're
you.
Waiting.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, all.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Bye
for now.